FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's February 12th, 2018. Well, we saw tremendous volatility last week in the markets. 1,000-point shifts in a day, 1,000-point losses a couple of days, and makes you wonder, is this the long-awaited, dreaded correction? Well, looking at it today, the last time I looked, the market was up several hundred points. It's up 222 points. We're talking right as of 12:15 p.m. Eastern time. Well, is the Fed in a box? Can the market keep doing what it's been doing? Well, I don't know the answer to that question, but do know you should email us, participate, and just send an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, John Rubino's with us now. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, it's a reasonably happy Monday. I'm kind of getting tired of missing these big moves, though. You know, I didn't buy Bitcoin before it took off. And now I didn't buy volatility last month, which was the, you know, an almost generational speculation there where you could have grabbed one of those leveraged funds and quadrupled your money in a really short time when volatility spiked.
In a day. You know, it was amazing. It was I interviewed Charles Nenner, renowned cycle analyst and investor. Regularly have him on the show. This was in mid-December of last year, and he was calling the volatility. He had no hesitation, said that's the place to be. He's a more short-term trader, but you know, he was in and out three times by the time it really spiked, but it went up from 11 to 50. Actually, the closing price for January was 13 and change, and it hit 51 and then pulled back to like 21, and now it's trading close to 27. I mean, talk about an aptly named index, huh?
Yeah, really. And you know, the thing is that's what it does at the end of each cycle. You know, we should be used to this by now, because if you go back to 2000 and then 2007, volatility was extremely low until it wasn't anymore, until it went just vertical, you know, because when markets start getting really erratic at the peak of a long run, that's when volatility really spikes, because it's a measure of fear in the marketplace. And all of a sudden, people got very afraid. You know, when the stock market drops by 1,000 points, you know, the fear is palpable out there. Because if it can drop by 1,000, why can't it drop by 10,000? You know, if one thing is highly unlikely, why can't some other highly unlikely thing happen? All the certainty goes out the window, and that's when volatility spikes. So that's what we saw. And, you know, stocks are way up this morning at 400 points on the Dow. But that doesn't necessarily calm anybody down, because we're still in a really volatile place where things are spiking and then crashing. So a 400-point up day on the Dow is reassuring if you're long, but it also makes you wonder if we're going to see another 1,000-point drop the next day, you know, because that's the pattern that we're now forming. And that makes people really nervous. But it's also a repeating pattern of history. You know, the analogy that I've used a couple of times in books is a spinning top. You know, you spin it and then it keeps spinning beautifully, really smoothly for a long time. And then a little wobble sneaks into its movement. And then the wobble gets bigger and bigger and bigger until the top just shoots off the table. Right. Stock markets are like that. You know, you have this really smooth run when everybody gets complacent, and then some wobble starts to sneak in. And that's what we're seeing right now. So if history repeats, this wobble gets bigger and bigger until we have a crash. There's no guarantee that history repeats this time around. But if you're looking at the past, you see this pattern playing out, and we're partway through a very familiar pattern. And that's got to be terrifying to anybody who's long right now, because historically the pattern has played out with a crash not long after the big wobbles start to sneak in.
Yes. Yeah, well, 90% of the move happens in 10% of the time, right?
That's the old saying, you know, bull markets take the escalator and bear markets take the elevator. In other words, they go straight down when the time comes. So we'll see. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to this world today. Mainly, there are central banks out there that stand ready to lean against any kind of market turmoil by buying bonds and buying equities either secretly or overtly. And that's a wild card because that means, you know, the old plunge protection team, which we've had in the U.S. for a long time, now operates on steroids globally. So you don't know what the central banks of the world are going to do to try to short circuit the market taking the elevator down. And you also don't know if they can do anything. You know, it's possible that once this thing gets going, psychology will have changed to the point where it really doesn't matter if the central bank is in there buying equities because everybody's going to be more than willing to sell their equities to the central bank, you know, and let them buy everything as a way of getting out. And then the market will collapse after that. I don't know. We'll see. This time is a little different. But history and fundamentals usually win out eventually. And I think there's a fairly good bet that that this time won't be appreciably different. You know, the timing and the details might be different, but we're still heading into a period of fairly extreme turmoil. And there's a lot of fundamental reasons for that, too. Now, you know, you look at the news just lately, Trump's new budget projects $1 trillion deficits for as far as the eye can see, you know, and we're at the peak of the cycle now. This is usually when governments are bringing in enough tax revenue that deficits appear to be shrinking and actually appear to be on the verge of disappearing. And everybody gets really complacent about deficit spending. Well, here we are with deficits soaring going forward. And the assumption out there, or at least the projections, don't include a recession. You know, we've got $1 trillion deficits with steady growth, according to government projections out there. And nobody believes that. So the $1 trillion deficit that's now projected will be a $2 or $3 trillion deficit in the next recession. Meanwhile, we've got wages rising for the first time in this cycle, really. And that's one of the indicators that the Fed looks at. You know, wage inflation scares central banks because if people are making more and more money, that tends to push up the consumer price index, which is, you know, rightly or wrongly, the thing that the Fed looks at, or at least a variation of the consumer price index, is what they look at to decide whether interest rates should be rising. And, you know, if you've got wages rising and initial jobless claims at a near record low, in other words, nobody's getting laid off and having to claim unemployment, that's a signal to the central bank that inflation is starting to rear its head and it's time to raise interest rates, which is what the Fed is doing and which is what a few other central banks are at least considering doing. And then you got long-term interest rates rising, which is part of that same scenario where the markets get spooked. They don't want to hold low-yielding long-term bonds anymore. And so they sell those bonds, which pushes down the price of the bonds and pushes up the yield on the bonds. And that's happening now, too. You know, you got the 10-year Treasury yielding 2.8%, which is near its multi-year high. And if it goes up above 3%, a lot of people are saying that's a trigger for a crash, because that implies that interest rates are headed up with a bullet. they're going to keep rising from here, and that'll destabilize the financial markets, or at least the equity markets, by making bonds more attractive because they yield more than stocks. So you've got a lot of things going on right now which point towards higher interest rates, which in turn point towards greater financial market instability. It's an interesting time, and it's also a familiar time. This is the kind of thing that happens at the peak of cycles. So then the question becomes, you know, what do the authorities do about this? And they're kind of in a box because if the Fed raises interest rates, like a lot of the data points that they watch are now telling them to do, then they're risking puncturing the financial asset bubble out there. In other words, if interest rates go up beyond a certain point, then the stock market is likely to crash. And that's terrifying for the Federal Reserve, because they're not sure the global financial system can handle a 20% drop in equity prices just because we're so highly leveraged. On the other hand, if they respond to volatility in the stock market by going back to quantitative easing and starting to buy bonds again to push down interest rates and maybe buying equities to pump up or to push up equity prices, then you create an even bigger bubble. that might be much more unstable than the thing we've got now, which gives you an even bigger crash. So it, you know, it's not clear how they get out of this, which has always been the sound money thesis, you know, that at a certain point, there are no good options. Whatever the Fed does, it blows up the global financial system. So, you know, it could be that we're finally at that point.
Hey, maybe we are, you know, like, I just don't know, but we've been at this point for so long and nothing has happened, right?
Well, that's how bubbles work. You know, they hit a point where rational analysts who are looking at history say, okay, this is over. It can't go on anymore. Like, and then it keeps going on, you know, it keeps expanding. That was the year 1999 when tech stocks were overvalued, but they doubled from there, or the 2005 when house prices were already outrageous and mortgage-backed bonds were already extremely risky. Well, it didn't blow up till 2007. So right. The people who are calling for an end to the cycle frequently are discredited by the actual end of the cycle, you know, and this happened again, you know, where it looked like it didn't go on much longer 3 years ago based on stock valuations and bond yields, et cetera, et cetera. But it's managed to keep on expanding. But eventually bubbles burst. And
they do.
We don't know whether this is the bursting that we're watching, but it's reasonable to think that when it does burst, it'll look a lot like this. You know, we're seeing the early stage of a bubble bursting, or an example of an early stage of a bubble bursting, and we won't know whether it's the actual bubble bursting until after the fact.
Hey, speaking of bubbles bursting, what about Bitcoin here? It's trading now. It's back to like 8,600. Is that a similar situation here?
Well, Bitcoin, if you go back through its history, there have been a lot of crashes. You know, it's had a lot of 40, 50, 60% declines and then gone on to just rocket from there. You know, it hits a bottom when people are saying, well, this thing was a flash in the pan. It never made any sense to begin with. And then a year later, everybody's wishing they bought it at that bottom. Will that happen again? I don't know. You know, again, with cryptocurrencies, there are so many moving parts and so little history that I'm totally unqualified to talk about what happens next, you know, because so many things could happen. You know, we don't know what governments are doing vis-a-vis cryptocurrencies, for instance. And in the last year, a lot of regulations happened around the world that presumably played a part in Bitcoin tanking. And we don't know if governments will continue with regulation of cryptocurrencies to the point where they don't function anymore. We also don't know whether Bitcoin is the winner eventually in the race to populate the world with viable cryptocurrencies. Maybe something else is better. We can't know that because it's a technological race that, you know, in a sector where nobody really understands the technology, or at least the dynamic of the interplay between the different kinds of coins. So who knows? You know, I think the concept of cryptocurrencies is really interesting. And I think the blockchain has a lot of different places where it could revolutionize markets. You know, it's a very important technology. Yeah. What that means for Bitcoin's price is anybody's guess, you know?
Good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that that things are happening so quickly, John, and it's changing so quickly. Having gone to the North American Bitcoin conference, I can tell you that that you just don't know what's going to happen. You really don't. I mean, who can tell? And like you said, how can you tell if some obscure currency is going to be the way to go? You just don't know. You really don't.
But that's normal for a new technology, right? Mm-hmm. You could have gone back to the 1970s and seen a lot of really promising computer companies, most of which don't exist mm-hmm. anymore. And a lot of the dominant ones hadn't yet been founded when computers really got going.
Right.
The dot-com bubble, you know, there were a lot of really promising internet companies, but most of them fell by the wayside, and only a handful of them, you know, the eBays and the Amazons, ended up dominating the internet. And probably with cryptocurrencies, we'll see that same dynamic where 10 years from now, there will be some new names that are really powerful in that sector. And a lot of familiar names today won't be around anymore.
Yeah.
And most people are completely unqualified to make any kind of a prediction about how exactly that plays out. You know, who are the winners and who are the losers, because this is uncharted territory. So I think it's the kind of thing where one strategy might be to make an index fund of cryptocurrencies where you buy a little bit of every one, you know, and 9 out of 10 will cease to exist, but one will go up by 10,000%. And so you end up making money on that index fund. And that might be the only way to do this for the average person.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wouldn't even pretend to say whether Litecoin or Ethereum or Bitcoin will be still standing a decade from now, because who knows?
There's really no way to know. But it's going to be here. The blockchain is here to stay, right? I mean, it's really...
It looks really promising. That's all I'm qualified to say about it right now. Isn't it? You know, it looks like it has a lot of uses, and a lot of big players are very interested in it.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure. A lot of big players going into it, but how much have they really put in? I'm not sure, but we do know some for certain, and we're just going to have to see what happens. So any feels for what the market's going to do this week? Is it going to calm down and then come back, you know, doing whatever it was going to do?
Oh, I think it'll fluctuate. Who knows?
It'll fluctuate.
You know, eventually, I think that there's a financial crisis out there, obviously.
Yeah.
But whether it's this week or 2 years from now, I have no idea. I've got a lot of short positions, you know, which means I'm putting my money down on the idea that we'll see enough extreme fluctuation that a lot of stocks that are now overvalued by historical metrics will be lower in the next year or two, and that a short position will make money on that. But, you know, as far as what the overall market does, who knows? But again, because you've got the central banks coming in. You know, if you were just looking at valuations, you'd say it's crash time, because stocks are just wildly overvalued. Bonds are even more overvalued, and houses are pretty expensive. So therefore, these things have to go down to get back to rational valuation. You know, that is easy to say. But then what's the Bank of Japan going to do, or the ECB or the Fed? You know, that's harder to predict, because they don't agree right now on what they should be doing. So there's no reason to think that they're all going to be on the same page a year from now, unless there's a gigantic financial crash. You know, if there's a 2008-2009 replay, then you'll see all the central banks on the same quantitative easing page. You know, they will be buying bonds hand over fist. A lot of them will be buying stocks, and they'll cut interest rates into negative territory. And, you know, that is out there. That's going to happen at some point. But the timing of it is impossible to predict, at least, you know,
well,
for me.
You know, Will Rogers used to say, invest in inflation. It's the only thing going up. Well, maybe now we should be investing in volatility. It may very well be the only thing going up, other than precious metals, perhaps. But that remains to be seen when that's going to take off. Anyways, check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Check out ours, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for both our newsletters. Email us, like I said, kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. John, we'll catch you next Monday. Same time, same place.
Thanks, Kerry. Talk to you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.